Lena Life. I am Lena Mirmond, and I have another show, another very special show. In fact, the show has its borders stretched to Europe. We're having an extremely interesting and talented scientist, Dr. Jan Stassen. I hope I will be forgiven if I didn't pronounce Dr. Stassen's name correctly. But I will continue with my brief introduction regarding his title, and then he will correct me after I will finish to do so. So Dr. Jan Stassen, professor of medicine, and he's a head of the Studies Coordinating Center of the Laboratory of Hypertension at the Campus St. Raphael in Leuven, Belgium. So all the way from Belgium, we do appreciate Dr. Stassen's time, energy, and willingness to share his knowledge. Welcome, Dr. Stassen. How are you? And my first question would be, did I pronounce your name close to the truth?
Yes, it's correct. Thank you.
Well, I would try to summarize the issues which I like to cover today, and hopefully it will have a strong and direct correlation with your research and your knowledge, which indeed has to do with hypertension, which has to do with correlation with a cardiovascular disease, and it has to do with some connection to our habits to take salt or sodium. I particularly was, frankly, quite astonished when I read about one of your conclusions that indeed lower intake of salt does not solve a hypertension issue. And then not to go much further than that, but just to have a little other connection, which hopefully we will be able to discuss, is a correlation between sodium and cardiovascular disease, which I know in this country, in general people's mind, doesn't have a very direct and very clear connection. So the first question I like to start from basis, which has to do with blood pressure. It is certainly has two major parameters, which are systolic and diastolic. And before we will be engaging in more detailed scientific discussion of it, physiological discussion, I should say, would you please clarify those two parameters, what they mean when we go to the doctor, so we will be understanding exactly what to look for?
That's an easy question. Systolic blood pressure is the pressure in the arteries when the heart contracts, whereas diastolic blood pressure is the pressure in the arteries when the heart is resting. So during contraction, the peak pressure is systolic pressure. When the heart is relaxed, the lowest pressure is the diastolic pressure.
Now, I'd like to ask you a question regarding the checking blood pressure. If it is an area of your expertise, it will be very helpful, because personally I know there are different ways to check blood pressure over a period of time, or even if you're at the doctor's office, they ask you to be in different positions. They certainly check sometimes different arms, and there are ways of determining if indeed there is a problem of hypertension, or it's just fluctuation of an anxiety which produce natural elevation of blood pressure. So what is your take in terms of checking blood pressure and when person needs to be aware that there is indeed a problem?
Well, when a patient goes to the doctor's office, there is often a rise in blood pressure. And we call this actually white coat hypertension. And to diagnose hypertension, if this is done at the doctor's office, several visits are needed to really confirm or suspect the diagnosis. But the best way to confirm the diagnosis is to have self-measurement of blood pressure at home using a validated blood pressure measuring device or record the blood pressure over 24 hours using monitors.
There are different monitors, and certainly I like to take advantage of having this discussion with you. There are some digital devices, there are some old-fashioned devices. Do you have any preference yourself?
I think there are very well-validated oscillometric devices, so automated devices, that can be used at home and that do not require special training of patients to engage in self-measurement of blood pressure. And I would certainly recommend the use of such device, but people have to be sure that it's listed among validated devices. And there are some good websites, for instance, the one of the European Society of Hypertension, where devices that can be recommended are listed. An important issue is also that one should only use devices that measure blood pressure at the upper arm. Blood pressure measuring devices that are applied to the wrist often give erroneous readings.
Some technical questions regarding the numbers, because you expressed certain ideas how it should be checked, and you explained the parameters of systolic and diastolic numbers. Let's go and talk before we will go to physiological aspects of it. I like to ask about some numbers. Of course, we know that, for example, average number 90 over 40 or 85 over 40 will be somewhat normal numbers, but they vary between ages, and they also vary in terms of the circumstances. You mentioned yourself that once we come into doctor's office, it can be somewhat slight elevation. But what are the age group and the correlation with the numbers one needs to be aware of?
Well, let me first tell you that there is an increase in systolic blood pressure with age, which continues up to very old age, whereas for the diastolic pressure, it increases until about 50 years of age, and then it starts to decrease. The underlying cause for this is stiffening of the big arteries. Another important issue is that the association of cardiovascular complications with blood pressure is continuous. It means that there is a gradual increase in the risk with higher blood pressure. And what we are using as normal thresholds, these are actually operational thresholds that doctors can use in clinical practice to make a decision about whether or not treatment is needed in a particular patient. Now, to come back to values for the office pressure, that's the pressure measured in the doctor's office. Usually the threshold is 140 systolic and 90 diastolic. For the self-measurement of pressure, the values are lower, 135 systolic and 85 diastolic.
I see. And we certainly will talk about increasing blood pressure proportionally to the age, which just jumping a little bit ahead will be connected to your observations in a European population, which is basically can be applied to American population because physiology is very similar and some of the aging issues are similar as well. But coming back to this technical aspects, for example, if we're dealing with a sport people, they are heart rate slower than a regular population. Is there any different connection and different proportion between the blood pressure and the heart rate?
No, there is no clear association between the two, although people with a higher heart rate tend to have higher blood pressure. And perhaps I should also clarify that if one reads the guidelines for management of hypertension, both in the U.S. or in Europe, that the thresholds that I mentioned, 140 over 94 office pressure, 135 over 85 millimeters of mercury, are applicable both to women and men, although women in general have lower pressure than men, and they are also applicable across the age range, starting from 20 up to very old age. So there is no difference in these threshold values, according to guidelines, both at both sides of the Atlantic.
Okay. This is extremely helpful. Needless to say that we all get quite nervous coming to the doctor's office, and if we're equipped with these measures and these numbers, at least we that much more prepared for the discussion if there are some discrepancies or some elevation or sometimes in not only higher blood pressure, hypertension, but hypertension, which is low blood pressure. I'd like to ask you about this low blood pressure because that's something I did not frankly get the same clarity with the sodium intake. So if we will not touch still this dietary area, can I ask you about low blood pressure? What does it mean?
Well, low blood pressure, I don't think that's a big problem. There are what might be a problem in real life is the fall in blood pressure that occurs with standing up. And that might cause problems. And that's why doctors usually measure pressure or have to measure blood pressure, certainly if a patient is treated both in the supine or sitting position, and then after the patient is standing or standing up, and if there's a drop in the, for instance, in the systolic pressure of more than 20 to 40 millimeters of mercury, which can occur in real life, then the patient might experience symptoms, and this we call orthostatic hypotension.
I see. When a person starts to develop gradually some fluctuation, in the morning it is lower, close to normal blood numbers, but close to the night or some after sunset times, blood pressure goes up, and perhaps it's connected to the fatigue, extensive tension through the day. Is there any kind of a typical schedule, if I can say, when these problems gradually started to occur?
I think you are referring to the diurnal profile of blood pressure here, and that's very well documented using 24-hour ambulatory blood pressure monitoring. And in most people, the blood pressure is highest in the morning and during the day, and then in the evening it starts to decrease, and the blood pressure is lowest during sleep at night. That's a normal pattern. In some patients, blood pressure at night does not dip, as we call it, and these people might be at higher risk than people in whom the blood pressure decreases at night.
Well, we are going to make a bridge to something which I'm extremely anxious to discuss. We will talk about salt intake, and we will talk about benefits of walnuts, which you indicated can be extremely beneficial. But before then, we will we'll be kind to you. We will let you rest a little bit, and we will pose on information which you kindly already shared with us with the help of a short piece of music, after which I will come back to my very special guest from Belgium, Dr. Jan Stassen, who is very known in issues of hypertension and connection with CVD, which is cardiovascular disease. Continue my discussion with Dr. Jan Stassen, and we did cover some technical aspects of checking blood pressure, discuss exactly what those parameters are meaning to each of us. We did talk about numbers, and we had just a little touch of possible signs of problems. And now I'd like to ask this question, which I was very impatient to ask, relationship between hypertension and well-known connection to the sodium intake, which we use in form of salt. Dr. Stassen, you truly surprised me with your conclusion, and now it's my ample opportunity to give you your word and explanation.
You're asking about our findings that we published recently about the association between cardiovascular mortality and salt intake, or sodium intake, actually, I guess. What we did, basically, is we investigated approximately 3,700 participants in our study. They were randomly recruited from European populations, and we followed them for close to 8 years on average. We subdivided them in three groups, one with low sodium intake, one with medium sodium intake, and one with high sodium intake. The values going with that, if you express it in grams of sodium, not sodium chloride, but sodium. And I'm now rounding the numbers. The low sodium group was on about 2.5 grams of sodium per day. The middle group, 4 grams, and the top group, 6 grams. What we noticed is that there was an inverse association between cardiovascular mortality and sodium intake. We measured this from 24-hour urine samples. Sodium excretion, actually. If you take the low sodium group, the cardiovascular mortality was 4%, meaning that four participants out of 100 died over the course of follow-up from a cardiovascular cause. In the middle group, this was half this number, so 2%, and in the top group of sodium, this was only 1%. So there was an inverse association between cardiovascular mortality and sodium excretion as measured in 24-hour urine samples. We also had a look at the incidence of hypertension or the risk of hypertension in a smaller group. So there was no association in our hands between hypertension and sodium output in urine. And then in another group nested within our cohort of 3,700 people, we also had to look at change in blood pressure over time and change in sodium excretion over time. And there was a very weak association between sodium or change in sodium excretion and change in systolic blood pressure. So for a 2.5 grams sodium difference over time, there was a difference in systolic pressure over of close to 1.7 millimeters mercury, which is actually very, very small amount. There was no association between change in sodium and change in diastolic pressure. So that's in a nutshell what we published recently in the Journal of the American Medical Association.
Well, I believe that you brought so much business instantly to the salt industry, because everyone who was deprived up to this very moment now will feel freedom to satisfy their salty taste. And I certainly personally was quite astonished, because coming from Europe myself, I remember being a little girl, my grandmother always was watching this salt intake. So you just made this revolutionary connection, I would say, without much of an exaggeration. I wanted to ask you to go a little deeper in terms of that salt intake. I believe the quality of the salt, it has, for example, enriched with iodine, raw salt from the ocean unprocessed, or salt which was somewhat diminished in the minerals, probably will make somewhat difference in the metabolism. So the question is there any connection between conditions and between the way salt is taken by human body and hypertension? Or chemistry is chemistry, no matter what kind of a salt you take, the outcome is the same.
I don't think there is any difference between different kinds of salt. What is important to know is that all salts contain sodium chloride, whatever the source is, or whatever has been added to the salt. So the important issue is sodium chloride. And sodium chloride, or actually sodium, because it's the sodium that is important, sodium is very well regulated in the body. A lot of people think that it is accumulating in the body. This is not true. If you eat too much, you will lose the sodium via the urine. If there is not enough sodium in your food, then the body will try to conserve sodium by excreting less via the kidney. So it's a very well-regulated ion in the body.
So the notion between amount of fluid we have and amount of salt we have, for example, we get very thirsty if we had a salty food. Would you say that this is just a natural regulation of the body, which you just described, which indeed will make body to drink more to wash away the sodium, excesses of sodium?
That's exactly what is happening. If you eat very salty food, you will have more thirst, and you will wash away the sodium within the next couple of hours. It's not maintained, it's not retained in the body, you lose it again.
Just again, side question regarding special group of people, again, sport people, or for example, I'm dealing a lot with performing artists who just go to the extreme of physical endurance, focus. Would you suggest that, for example, they are not enough alert to their desire to replace the fluid intake because their activities, by definition, is over-occupying their almost instinct sensation? Are they supposed to be aware or to be reminded by their coaches that they have to drink a little bit more? What is a little correlation there?
Well, I'm not aware of the conditions in which they are exercising, but one should not forget that also losing, that you can lose a lot of sodium chloride by sweat. So if they exercise in hot conditions, that has to be taken into account for sure.
Besides relationship with the sodium, any other discovery you had, for example, if a person in a situation where lighter diet takes place, is that any easier on a heart situation? Let's shift to CVD, cardiovascular disease, because you determined that there is a direct connection there. What is the situation there, if you can explain a little bit more clearly, because that relationship, frankly, was not as clear to me as with the hypertension. We found out that indeed relationship between blood pressure, hypertension, and salt is very minimum, opposed to our classic conviction, I would say, that once hypertension will take place, we have to watch our salt intake. My question was regarding relationship of sodium and cardiovascular disease, because I said that in terms of connection between sodium and hypertension is clear, at least on the human everyday use. But if you can kindly elaborate how indeed cardiovascular disease can be aggravated by sodium.
Lack of sodium, then.
Oh, lack of sodium. Thank you.
Because what we showed in our study is that low sodium excretion in urine, which is the best measurement to assess salt intake, 24-hour urinary sodium excretion, that low sodium excretion was associated with higher cardiovascular mortality. Actually, if you compare the low sodium group and the high sodium group, there's a fourfold increase in cardiovascular mortality going from high salt intake to low sodium intake. So this is, at least in our study, for the general population, and we are actually not the first to demonstrate that. There have been some previous studies that showed the same thing. And in April and May this year, two papers have been published in Diabetes Care showing that also in patients with type 1 and type 2 diabetes, there was an inverse association between sodium excretion and mortality. So lower sodium intake, higher mortality.
Another, I'm jumping in, sorry, interrupting. Mm-hmm. So there is another reason for celebration for this salty taste, which we all like. This is quite extraordinary news. I was not aware about the condition of connection between salt and diabetes. And thank you for bringing this up. I wanted to ask you, however, if we will become too enthusiastic, everything out of proportion can be damaging. So you did mention...
I'm not recommending to increase salt intake. But what I'm very worried about is that in the U.S., the American Heart Association is recommending to decrease at the level of the population sodium intake to 1.5 grams per day by the year 2020. Now, you have to realize that, so it's 1.5 grams of sodium per day. The average in our low sodium group was 2.5. So it was 1 gram of sodium per day more in the group with the highest cardiovascular mortality. So one has really to be careful because reducing salt intake at the level of the general population might have some beneficial effects, but on the other hand, there might also be adverse effects, and one has to consider both sides before really putting this into practice. So I'm not recommending people to eat more salt, but I'm trying to say if you really want to reduce salt intake at the population level to 1.5 grams of sodium per day, is this really going to help? So one should really question this.
Thank you so much for clarifying this. You did predict my question, which actually you did answer in terms of amount. And yes, I became a little bit over enthusiastic by assuming that we have this celebration of return of salt. But I like to, in fact, focus on your comment regarding American Heart Association, because it is indeed extremely strongly well-spread information that, and I should say almost propaganda, that the less salt, the better that is. So I frankly like to add something else. What's happening, sometimes they put less salt, but they put more sugar for some taste benefits. I personally believe it's extremely damaging, especially if we're dealing with diabetic people and also for children. So what you're saying brings so much more balance when we can just continue using salt as a common sense, our everyday habit, and not to compensate for lack of salt with adding more sugar. Your thoughts on that?
Well, I think one should be very careful in reducing salt because, as you say, salt might be replaced by other substances to increase taste, and this might not be always very favorable for the health of people. And as a matter of fact, just a couple of days ago, the American Journal of Hypertension published a review, a meta-analysis as we call it, from the studies, intervention studies that looked at the effects of decreasing salt intake on the risk of cardiovascular disease. And actually this review, and Rod Taylor is the first author, this review could not show any benefit in terms of cardiovascular disease. So this is, one really has to be very careful if one would like to reduce at population level salt intake to such low levels as proposed by the American Heart Association.
Extraordinarily important, and it is quite stunningly different philosophy, and I would say absolutely concrete findings between European classical science and Americans. Did you find it still possible to have a dialogue with American medical groups? Did you find it is somewhat, if not stimulating, but somewhat productive to exchange this quite contradicting information?
Well, it's not so contradicting, I would say. You have to realize that the recommendations to reduce salt intake to these very low levels are based on two extrapolations. The first extrapolation is that indeed if you have hypertensive patients or normotensive subjects, if you go to extremes of salt intake, means if you do a clinical trial and you change salt intake with a very big amount, then you see some small effects on blood pressure. In the normotensive people, which are comparable with our general population, the effects are about 2 millimeters mercury. That's what we saw in our population study. And in the hypertensive patients, the maximum you can expect for a drastic reduction of salt intake just on its own is around 4 millimeters mercury systolic. So the first extrapolation that the regulators have made is that what you see in short-term intervention studies, these small decreases in blood pressure, that you would also see it in the general population in the long term if you extrapolate these short-term studies with extremes of sodium intake to general population. The second extrapolation that they have made is that if you have this small difference in systolic pressure in the general population, if you reduce sodium intake to this very low level, that this small difference in systolic pressure would translate in a benefit in terms of cardiovascular complications. And this has never been proven to be that this is really the case. So these two extrapolations are really driving the current guideline to decrease sodium intake at the level of the general population. And again, I think the public should be aware of this. Public should be informed about the possible benefits, and but also about the possible adverse effects of, reducing sodium intake to such low levels. And actually, everybody should be able to make an informed decision about what to eat or not to eat, because all food is labeled for sodium content.
What I meant before the difference is that indeed in America it is well known position that the less of salt and low sodium you see it in a mass production in any food, especially canned food, this is something very common and classic practice of everyday life. And what you're saying is bringing awareness that indeed this is not necessarily the best way to go. And I like to bring another very interesting, I would say engaging, information regarding walnuts. Is that true that walnuts are fantastically beneficial and can take place of some drugs?
I'm not sure about that. I don't think so. It's also a little bit outside my field of experience. I'm not a nutritionist, but I don't know. I cannot answer that question.
The reason I brought this up because it was some mention in your walnuts along with one of your scientific conclusion, and the hypertension was somewhat connected to its improvement if one will use certain amount of walnuts. But if it is not, if nutrition is not your expertise, I just will leave it like that. But it is something which
I'm not aware of any clinical trial or randomized clinical trial in this aspect.
I see. Okay, I like to talk about older population, and if you can go a little bit into physiology in terms of aging process and how this hypertension situation occurs, and of course how can be a cardiovascular disease if not prevented totally but can be slowed down.
Yeah, hypertension, the risk of hypertension or becoming hypertension, hypertensive increases with age. And for instance, every man 50 years or 55 years old who is still normotensive, he will have a lifetime risk of becoming hypertensive. at 55 years of about 90%. So everybody, practically everybody that can grow old will get hypertension sooner or later in his or her lifetime. And so people, I had a lot of discussion with my American colleagues, and this one of the issues was that actually the findings in our study would not be applicable to the elderly because the average age in our study cohort was about 40 years. But we actually analyzed, and this will be published, I hope, soon, we analyzed those that are that were 60 years and older separately, and actually the findings in these older people were confirmatory. So lower sodium intake was associated with higher cardiovascular mortality. Actually, most of the cardiovascular deaths occurred in those age 60 and above.
Dr. Stason, for remaining time, I should say, a little bit about yourself. Are you planning to write some books? Where you are now in your research? What is the immediate future?
The immediate future. Well, we are still running. I'm leading this network of European centers, and actually, we are now recruiting centers also in sub-Saharan Africa and in Latin America that really do these epidemiological measurements that we published. They are doing this in a very standardized way, and I hope that these centers will be as productive as the European centers, and that we will become a global network that can deal with the with cardiovascular disease and describe the lifestyle and environmental risk factors, and also, as time goes by, the genetic risk factors. But it's very important to keep people in follow-up and to have to measure really the same thing. So all these people that are working at these different centers, they have been trained here in Leuven, so that if they measure blood pressure, they do it all in the same way, to give you just an example.
What a fantastic global vision you have. And I will conclude with my personal thanks to you, because this program is going to be discussed by my friends, colleagues, some young students, and some older people. Unfortunately, hypertension is noticeable more and more among young population. And one of the reason I'm so thankful to have this conversation with you, because your immediate knowledge from every parameters, from physiological to research numbers, and very direct and concrete results make a tremendous impact in our minds. So we connect our understanding with, of course, with very limited medical insights, but it is extremely helpful. I personally learn a lot, and I wanted to thank you very much for what you're doing, for bringing this very innovative approach in terms of research, and bringing tremendous clarity and certainty on what we're doing right and on what we're doing wrong. So on this note, I wanted to wish you absolutely the best of success to follow your knowledge and to expand it. And with my thanks, I will wish you absolutely the best.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And that was my program with Dr. Jan Stason from Belgium. And we did talk about very common and happen to be extremely important component of our life as salt. We're more clear on taking the salt, we are more clear on benefits, and we are more clear how we can use it to our pleasure without being afraid of damaging our body. That was another program of Lena Life. I am your Lena Mirmont, and we will say goodbye to our medical subject. Until next week, we will have another topic. Be well and enjoy your salt.